My name is Jane Rieke. I'm from the University of Washington. And this is the fifth in the series on children with disabilities. And today's subject is the child in our congregations. What are the issues? During this past week, we've been talking about a variety of kinds of disabilities that children have and the effect of these on their families and on parents and on grandparents and on neighbors and on communities and on congregations. We've talked in terms of what families go through, which I think is sort of a forerunner for today, some of the grief things that happen to families when there is a child with a disability, either a developmental disability or an accident in the family, how when you're dealing with children, that grief is never over. I mean, it reappears every time you watch your child with another child who is developing normally or who doesn't have a medical problem. It reappears particularly, and I think we need to recognize these times, when the baby is born, if it's observable then, or when the diagnosis is made. At the time when a child is 5 or 6, and most children will go off to a regular school doing regular kinds of things without particular parental concern, this child will be in a special program, will need special problems, will have to have special arrangements made, and you're kind of turning over a fragile child to the school. That's sort of a time not only of anxiety, but a time when we're concerned about when it really comes to us again that there's a difference. That grief reoccurs in adolescence. When children go into the stages of puberty, I think we need to recognize this for the sake of families in our congregation, that we think they're just well established and things are going well, and the child gets into the age when maybe the other kids in the congregation are into Youth League activities. Can this child go on the usual things? Is this child mentally able to participate in most of the games? What's going on in the congregation, and is this child have a place in that congregation, or what can we do? That's a hard time for parents. I think we need to recognize that it's a hard time as those of us who are in support systems or working with those families or even being with those families look at that. And the other really hard time is when the child is 21. The schools, if there are special school programs, are no longer providing special programs, and families need to deal with now what? Jobs, is a job a possibility? What kind of a job? Independent living, group living, all of those sort of turning the reins over, if one can, to encourage the young person to be as independent as possible in what that means. So the grief through which families who have children with disabilities in them, children with special needs, the grief through which they go is a continuous kind of thing. It's not the usual grieving 3 and 4 years and it's going to be over sort of thing that we hear and talk about. And I think we need to understand that. That it's, I call it grief revisited over and over again. So the support system is a continuing, the need for a support system is a continuing need. In many families, there is a lot of guilt. Guilt that you got rubella when you were pregnant and you got exposed, or the person exposed feels guilty. That there is a disability in the family history, great-grandma or uncle so-and-so, and no genetic counseling was done. Or one of the worst, of course, is the fetal alcohol syndrome. Children with fetal alcohol syndrome, the guilt is there. I mean, they drank, and that did it. And so there's that sort of thing to be dealt with. So are you familiar with the fetal alcohol syndrome? I see some going this way and some going this way. We hope that there is no more, because now we know what causes certain kinds of retardation. When the mother has been drinking during the pregnancy, and it's not necessarily a long-term drinking problem, it could even be a weekend binge. Certain times in the pregnancy, the fetus will be affected. It's observable at birth because of the flattening of the cheekbones and certain kinds of facial characteristics, and it has always resulted in some kind of retardation, which is, of course, then a continuing concern. And that's that has been discovered within the last 15 to 20 years. Now that it's been discovered, we find it in all cultures, and we are hoping with the recognition of the cause that we can say, that's it. I know the young women in our congregation who are even anticipating pregnancy will know, not even a glass of wine, because it's one of those things that we recognize is an event that happens during the pregnancy, and it is, so far as we know, the drinking of the mother. They're looking at the research now to see if father's drinking has any effect upon it. We don't know that yet. But that's obvious. It has to be a guilt trip, a real heavy guilt. When we don't know what's going on in parents thinking there's a handicapped child, they may withdraw from a congregation. They may withdraw from the very support systems that we think could be helpful to them. That talks about pain, parental pain. It also may be that an inadvertent remark may cause them to withdraw from a congregation. We want to talk about some of those kinds of things. I think we just need to recognize that's a reason that there's a very high degree of sensitivity. There's an additional need to be understood when some very difficult decisions are being made. What kind of school? What kind of therapy? Who? Difficult decisions at best, but I think when you're making decisions about a child, you're increasingly difficult for parents to make. And of course you get much too much advice from anybody else you know, and the people in the neighborhood, and the grandparents on both sides, and they seldom ever agree, and so the decisions are increasingly difficult to make. And then I think we need to ask ourselves, if we are, and we're talking about congregation, but let's just open it up to neighbors or in community, let's use the word in community with these, where are the support systems? There is one group of handicapped children for which I am not a good support system, that's cerebral palsy. I've worked with cerebral palsy children on grants, and I can handle the administrative portion, but I am not a good support system because I am too tender. I can handle autistic, the mentally retarded, the hearing impaired, muscular dystrophy, spina bifida, you know, all of those, but with cerebral palsy, it's just, that is just not for me. I can put support people together, but I am not a good support system in a personal way. So I do my support there in a resource way. So I think we have to recognize that there are a number of kinds of support systems. Some people who have been through the experience can be a good support person in a personal way. But I think we have to get out of the idea that we have to be all things to all people, because that is neither possible nor is it a useful situation. So those are some of the things we talked about earlier with reference to what families are going through, and those are just the sort of the tip of the iceberg. And then yesterday we talked about adapting some of our teaching programs in our schools, here in Vacation Bible School, in Sunday School, to help children learn. We've learned a lot. I think we probably should dedicate some of our recent skills in teaching to those who have disabilities, because we've learned from them how to make our activities more clear. If you're after power, are you after Stephanie? But she's in that room. You're right. I wish I could join you. My husband's taking notes for me. And we talk not only about children when we're looking about teaching skills, but we talked about disabled young adults with a variety of disabilities and what we can do to include them in our groups, and how we can adjust some groups and some of our activities to include them. We did a real interesting Sunday school lesson yesterday on the theme, I'll just look at my notes here, Thank God for Water. Have you ever thought of how to adapt Thank God for Water for children? We simply asked the question, what's the child to do? When you think about water, what could you have a child do with water?
Drink it.
Drink it.
Wash with it.
Wash, good.
Squirt it.
Squirt it, fun, wonderful. What else? Pour it, what else? Feel it, color it. Look at all the things you can do with water. And almost any child can do some of those. The blind can do some. Those who can't hear, you know, wouldn't hear the but can see it. And the experience of it gives you all kinds of opportunities to build on that experience with words or with actions. And when we think in terms of what's the child to do, we can adapt almost anything. If we think of what I'm to do, we get all hung up on, I don't know how. But I think in terms of the child, it becomes a much easier sort of approach. And we talked about that yesterday. Matter of fact, one of the young men was talking about helping disabled, retarded people in a classroom and in the church. So we had some help about that. And I know several of you have talked to me about people you know who have cerebral palsy or who have learning disabilities or who stutter or a number of things. You know people in your community or in your congregation, and you have been able to be helpful. And so I want us to realize that we are each a resource to the other as we think together, and that this is not the only resource person sitting here, but we'll open it up to all of us. The bookstore has a book. It's called What It's Like to Be Me. It's a book which is written and illustrated entirely by people who have disabilities, and I just want to read you a couple, you know, small sort of snippets from it to give you a feeling about how they feel. Here's one about hearing problems. I like to talk to people, I like to talk to hearing people, but I'm very shy with them. Some people are very surprised that I can speak. Some people talk to me, but I don't understand, and then I feel embarrassed. Some people say the deaf are dumb or mute, and I feel hurt. Most people feel sorry for me, but I don't like that because I don't want pity. Most hearing people do not understand sign language. Are you interested in learning sign language? I like that. We had at in our congregation, it's been almost a year ago now, a young woman who came and signed the whole service. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I think we seldom looked at the pastor. We got to understand the Holy Father and Jesus the Christ and some of those words over and over as she used them with sign language. And our young children in our Sunday school have learned several songs in sign, and that's kind of our way of beginning to help them feel more comfortable and to get it. Just basically our understanding, not that we're doing anything, but that we're understanding. Yes?
We invited the choir from the deaf church to join our choir.
Oh, nice.
And then the children's choir sang their song too, and I think the deaf were as impressed with that as we were.
That develops an understanding, doesn't it, about the shyness and embarrassment that the young writer was talking about. Here's another one about, this is called Helping is an Art. There's artwork there from somebody who, just a couple of them. I feel happy when people who don't know me say hello. That might not mean much to others, but to me it does, because some people don't even say hello. It makes me feel happy because they know that I am a person. Isn't that interesting? People don't need to worry about not helping. It's not necessary to help a handicapped person in the street because a severely handicapped will not be there. And they really have developed their own ways of coping. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there on their own. So ask them if they need help, but not if they're coping quite well, getting on by themselves. Always ask them and listen when they say no. That's something that people who have cerebral palsy have talked to us about, that if they say they don't need help and people insist on helping them anyway, it just makes them angry, because they want to try it on their own. And at the bottom, how not to help. According to me, this is by a child who's 10 years old. Okay. According to me, the worst mistakes that people make are when they help and praise themselves, when they help by giving things that are useless and they want to get rid of them, when they help but keep looking keenly at my handicap, when they help but keep asking me many questions about my handicap, when they help me sarcastically, when they help me unwillingly, when they help but keep abusing at the same time, when they help without love, when they help me as somebody useless. Those kind of insights aren't there for us to think about. Well, I found this a delightful book, and it's in the bookstore, and you might just even want to look through it. Maybe a place for us to start is to first just put on the board a list of the kinds of handicaps, names, titles. I don't like labels, but that's either descriptions or labels, and what we know about what that means to the child or the family. So over here, anybody want to start with one? So let's put hearing, because we started with that. Do you know what it means to, let's say, the child or the person who has a hearing problem? What kind of problems might be involved?
Speech.
All right. They are hard to understand. They are hard to understand. What else?
Developmental problems.
All right. They don't understand.
And when you have a newborn who doesn't hear and keeps growing every day.
In other words, how do you communicate?
It's often confused with mental retardation.
All right, good. That's what this took. Confused with mental retardation.
And for some families, one that I can think of, mental retardation and hearing hand in hand.
That's right, maybe both. And how do you separate?
Neurological deficit that...
I would say, or combined, or combined with. It also has a lot... For families, it may be an expense. The purchase of hearing aids, the cost of purchase of batteries. It is embarrassing when hearing aid starts to squeal. Well, that's a very embarrassing kind of thing. If it's embarrassing to somebody else, then there is... And hearing aids and hearing losses are very different kinds. I don't want to go into it now. It's kind of a Monday subject. But some people hear some sounds and not others. Some people, if they hear it all, will hear everything fine. Some people hear on one side and not on the other side. And because there are so many kinds of hearing problems, the fact that somebody knows a person with this kind of problem does not mean that that person is going to behave in the same way, develop in the same way, understand in the same way, or any of those things. And the thing of another factor that we must recognize as we interact with people with hearing losses is that some of us are easier to lip read, and I'm very mouthy, and it's easy to lip read me, and some people, my husband with a beard, it's absolutely impossible. And you have to recognize that you are easy for that person to understand or not, and not feel put out by it.
And if it's someone who with hearing, if they lose their hearing as they've developed, I mean, maybe they've developed in their 10 or 15 or 20, and then there's an accident, they lose their hearing. Mm-hmm. How frustrating that must be to them.
That's right. To lighten this up a little bit, a number of years ago I was working with a group of deaf high school children, and tutoring in the high school, and they wanted to have go on a skating party. And they wanted Vern, my husband, to go along. They're good lip readers, they're deaf, but they were able to skate rhythmically because of the rhythm that they feel. And they could, because they were lip readers, they could understand other people. And my husband, who depends on his hearing, could not hear nor understand anything there. They thought that was the funniest thing because the tables were turned. And he would keep saying, "What? What?" And they were just laughing at him, and finally he had to laugh with them because they, for a change, had the upper hand. They wanted him to go again next week because of the, I think, power they felt in that situation. Anyway, it was one of the fun experiences we had together. Let's just pick up another one to get a couple more up here on the board.
Asthmatic.
All right. Asthmatic, or I'm going to say allergy. What's it mean in the congregation, the home? What's it mean to family or to the child?
All the time speak to them.
All right. That's a stressful thing, isn't it? Always careful. In a congregation, I happen to have a granddaughter who is extremely alert, has many, many food allergies. She can't have milk, she can't have eggs, she can't have nuts, and a number of those things that are in all the cookies that are brought to church. And you have a Christmas party, and you have ice cream, and everybody can have ice cream but Anna. The very, and took a long time for somebody to say, I'm going to bring some cookies that she can have. And now she says, are these my kind of cookies? But it there were a couple of years before that took hold. So that's a feeling for the child of being left out. I've already given you some solution. Feeling of the child of being left out of our communion. Somebody has food allergies. Does your congregation provide rice wafers? Now, these are all kinds of different sorts of things we need to think about.
In the environment, we had a new church and we had children who couldn't come for months because of the carpeting and the boards.
And flowers do it to some people. All right. So then when you have a new church, there's not a lot you can do about that, but we need to recognize the effect, I'm going to say on young children, because I think older people tend to say, well, I can't. What it means to the feeling of being included in the family, in the community, in a congregation. All right, that's a good one. Another one. You have mentally retarded in your area? What does that mean to, let's say, the family? Are there levels? Well, let's just be descriptive. Are there levels of retardation? There surely are. Frequently accompanied with other kinds of disabilities? We need to think about families at the time when the child becomes an adolescent and the decisions have to be made about whether the child will go into a group home, whether the family will keep them with them, or whether the child has some ability to be independent. A very stressful time for families. Very stressful. A lot of support needed. So we have children who we may want to include in our Sunday school classes, very short attention spans, perhaps not as disciplined, perhaps a 4-year-old body and a 2-year-old mind. That's what you, do with that? What do you do with them when they're really the biggest one in the class, but functioning better with children who are younger? What do you do with their ability to sit in the congregation? What do you do with outbursts of noise? All of those kinds of things, which may be a part of the comfort level with these kinds of children. Anything else? Children with
physical illnesses, like MS, or
okay.
Dystrophy,
epilepsy. Physical. And you, muscular dystrophy, cerebral palsy, that variety. Let's talk about wheelchairs. Children in wheelchairs. What's that mean to the child? What's that mean to the parent? What's that mean to you? Yeah. Wish that. How wide are the doors? How wide are your aisles? Is there a place? Are there ramps? What's the access? Can the child sit in a pew or must always be in the aisle?
Downstairs to coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not only just the adults.
No. In our congregation, it's not handicapped children, it's little old ladies. Of which I'm soon to be one.
Yes.
You know.
But there's something or other when they're little old ladies, we take care of them. When there are children, we are shy of them. Don't quite know what to do. We let the parents handle it all. You ever thought that the parent might not like to wheel that wheelchair every place, or that the child might like to have somebody else involved, or
My sister-in-law's congregation, there's a little, I think he's 9 or 10, in a wheelchair, and she said he'd love to sing in the choir, but upstairs. Those were the only musical instruments off.
Well,
and she's fighting to get things changed, but it's fighting a whole congregation.
We're gonna would you keep that example and let's start with that. When we erase this, I want to talk about issues. That's an issue and a variety of ways we can look at that. Okay, let's problem solve that one. Let's, a couple more up here. Did you think of that you might be familiar with?
We have been on our congregation at Stutters.
Okay.
She's now an adolescent.
So let's say communication. Communication problems. Not as free to talk with other people.
In the last several years, I'd say she's put on 80 to 100 pounds.
You talk about stress? You think there's any stress there? Okay. That's an issue. Let's bring it up at issues. Time.
Work.
Work is of size. Size. All right. Good. How do you handle? Is it causing problems?
She's 20 years old as we are. She's treated like a child.
Okay. It causes problems. It causes problems. Wow. Do you know, there are some invisible ones.
Put it that way. But, you know,
oh, no.
Just the person's automatic reaction. Pat on the head.
I know it. Automatically. That's what I know. I know. But these are issues. Let's put them up again. I'm going to erase this and I'm going to lose them if you don't bring them back to us.
Epilepsy should go there with CPMS.
Okay.
And like a seizure problem.
Epilepsy and seizures. What's an issue here? What is our concern? What's the parental concern? What's the concern of the child?
Safety. The disturbance.
Disturbance. Being a disturbance. You know, it's interesting that we accept the disturbance of a person in our congregation as a heart attack. You know. But there's something about an epileptic seizure that the family or the person feels differently about that. And perhaps it's because we don't understand. There are some that are obvious and some that are hidden. And as we put this is a hidden one. Blindness is an obvious one. Right. This may be hidden. This is probably more obvious. These are more obvious. That's a hidden one, usually. Right. This is hidden until the person speaks, becomes obvious. That's an obvious one. Learning disability is a hidden one. What happens in the Sunday school class when children are asked to fill in the blanks or draw or some of those kinds of things? Just as when these children are asked to respond verbally, when this child is asked to respond in a written form, you get some stressful kinds of things. There are things that affect families, like a child with autism. Those kinds of more severe kinds of things which we don't usually see in our congregations, but which mean support for families. So let's keep those in mind too. Any others that you want to add to this before we take it off? Just to get our thinking sort of going about it's more than the one person you know, the more than the person who is a very small, but it is all of these other folks too. All right? I want us to do some mutual problem solving, which is kind of the only way to handle this, these issues. We're going to pretend or assume that we have these people in our congregations and see what the issue is that bothers us most or bothers them most and how we can do something about it. So up here on the left-hand side, I'm going to put the word issue. And over on the right-hand side, I've decided to put the words suggestions or options. And that's a way to think about them. That may be a way for your congregation to think about them. This is the issue. What is the issue that you want to talk about?
Well,
You have a 10-year-old.
Yeah, okay. It's a wheelchair issue.
Okay. You have a 10-year-old.
I mentioned that one because it was a child.
All right.
Our one wheelchair member just died.
All right. But let's talk about children. All right. I didn't want to, just to keep us focused for a while. I think we do a better job of dealing with adults somehow than we do with children.
Maybe because they're more able to cope with it.
Well, I don't know why, but we do. So we have a 10-year-old in a wheelchair. Now we have a lot of issues, but the issue for this child is, she wants to sing in the choir. The issue basically is, this child wants to be a participant. Let us look at how many activities, how many activities can he participate in? Can you name some? What can he do that the other children in your congregation can do?
Oh, now this is another congregation.
Well, whatever.
No, I've seen it, and she mentioned it because she's a choir director. But at the moment, their Sunday school is downstairs. They are finishing the upstairs, the Sunday school. They have no wheelchair access.
Okay, it's downstairs now. That congregation really should have some kind of access. That's just, excuse me, that is unforgivable in today's society.
But so is ours. We have wheelchair access to the main sanctuary.
You know what?
That's legal.
That's what this session is all about. To think about the other people to whom we are not ministering in our society, who need to be ministered to, who need to have access to the community which we call a congregation. So there's one issue right there is...
Now, in the finishing up there upstairs, they may make it accessible because they may add, that expense of an elevator to it. But we in our congregation are just looking at making our basement accessible because it was left out in the building 3 years ago. And to save money, and a construction issue, and it was legal because the main part was accessible, and we had wheelchair washrooms and stuff like that, but the fellowship area is not.
Okay, but doesn't it make us stop and think,
I'm very angry about the whole thing because I fought hard and wanted to get at least around the basement, and I did not win that issue.
A part of what it says to me is that the handicapped in our society are invisible.
Okay, the whole thing was, how many people do you know who are handicapped, who will need it? Who do you know that's in a wheelchair? And at the moment, there were none. Before the building was built, there was one. He has just died.
I wonder how many children who are in wheelchairs go to a church where there is a ramp. I don't know that. It's just a question, I think, to ask ourselves. But let's deal with this issue. It's not as close to our hearts as some, so it's going to be easy to talk about. I mean, it's not your congregation and my congregation, so we can just say anything we want to say. All right? And then all you have to do is find the money to do it. But how about things that don't cost money? Let's just take the specific. This child wants to be in the choir. Well, wants to sing. Let's say she wants to sing with the choir. Okay? Problem is, the choir sings upstairs. And what's the simplest thing you can think about?
I suppose the choir practices upstairs, too.
Because that's where all the instruments are.
What's the simplest thing you can think about?
Move the instruments down.
Yes.
Oh, just move the kids down. They don't need instruments all that much. Bring in a recorder. Bring in a keyboard, just a single keyboard.
But I'm a choir director, so I don't know if that's necessarily your best solution.
She's a choir director, but she's more than that. She's the whole musical director. She's got to be out there to play.
How about moving the choir practice to a home?
Put the choir then move to church to sing, and then you get to
Well, we're just looking at options.
Yeah.
You can move the choir practice someplace else. Can these children learn to sing a cappella? Can they learn to sing with somebody else getting them started and stop? There are a number of, I'm just trying to say, let's think
children
about...
Children love to sing with a guitar or an auto harp.
But traditionally, traditionally, all the children practice upstairs, there, because that's where the choir director accompanist has to be. Mm-hmm. Now, does she have to be there? Could somebody else do part of it? Can you separate the rehearsal from the performance? I don't know the answers to these.
Can someone carry the 10-year-old out of his wheelchair upstairs and take his wheelchair upstairs? I mean, sometimes it's not practical to move organs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But how about moving the child?
How about moving the child?
The simplest answer, we never thought about it, huh?
One has been thought about. I'll tell you that one has been thought of, and that one against the dignity of the child.
All right.
The child does not like that option.
All right. And if the child doesn't like it and would feel too different, then you have... So what we're saying, we're respecting the dignity of the child. The child may be... Sometimes a child may have to give a little. Mm-hmm. All right?
Mm-hmm. Depending how much.
Absolutely.
Because that's what the world
absolutely.
About, whether you're in a wheelchair or not, the world is give and take. Whether you're a 10-year-old in a wheelchair or a 50-year-old not in a wheelchair, you have to give and take. That's reality. I don't mean to be cruel, but if a 10-year-old who is in a wheelchair wants to sing in a choir, then that person has got to be willing to give and take too. And so does the church. But
and for that child, singing in the choir now and then may be sufficient. For example, singing in the choir at Christmas time when they sing downstairs, or singing with some performances may be all right for a while until the child feels comfortable moving up. So you don't have to start with everything full blown. I think we must recognize that what we call small increments sometimes are sufficient, at least to let, and then the child may be more willing. But to sing at Easter or sing at Christmas or Palm Sunday or something, when sometimes to practice regularly and sing sometimes, maybe, you know, that may be it. Who knows? But all I want us to get and I'm feeling for is that there are options. There are many ways to look at solving it. You get them all out. You don't just say, well, we can either do it this way or this way, and that's it. Because there's more than one other way to do it. And you figure out what's the most critical thing and see what you can do. And if you have to compromise, you have to compromise.
Well, both sides need to see what the situation is. But
right.
Maybe the people in the choir need to look at this young man and get a feel for how important it is to him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they just need to get to know him.
And he them.
And he them. Maybe he needs to see how difficult it is for them to move instruments or for them to practice somewhere else or for them to do whatever.
You know,
that they get to know each other and know what those issues are and appreciate each other's point of view too.
And with reference to
and
that, there's a way
so
to
afraid of each other.
There's a way to do that. Have you ever thought of having a meeting where that child is present to help problem solve? After all, if one of our aims is to help people be comfortable and self-sufficient, then to make the decision for that child may be a disservice. But to bring that child into the decision-making process, then that child may be willing to say, well, yeah, this is okay, or we could do this, or I can get here. And then it would be just an excellent idea. And I thank you for that. I probably wouldn't have come up with that this first time. I'd come up with it before the day was over, but not the first time around. A 10-year-old is perfectly capable. If he says, I don't want to do that for some dignity reason, then he has opinions. Well, that's a very good beginning for us, isn't it? To do some problem solving around it. Well, what are other issues that... All right, should we go to...
The little person.
Okay, let's just talk about the little person. Let's call it a little person. I like that. You identified it as a person.
quite a prominent person in the little people's organization.
All right,
quite aware of
and the what are the problems or that we want to deal with? What's the issue that we want to deal with? Can somebody put it into words?
I think mostly for her, it's maintaining dignity.
Okay.
In her environment.
And the issue is to maintain dignity. So we have a very short little person, short enough to be called a dwarf. So let's identify that as small, what, 3 feet? About?
Yeah.
Is this person proportioned well? All right.
She's really a dwarf.
All right, so she's got the proportional problems that dwarfs have. So we have a difference in appearance. So she's obvious. And the issue that we want to deal with specifically is how to help her maintain dignity. Does she say what bothers her? Does she feel she's maintaining dignity?
Well, someone who was quite good friends just made that mistake, having her own.
All right.
And she's mad.
Oh.
That was the problem.
All right.
Well, she probably runs into that
all
everywhere she goes. And she probably runs into both people of all ages, mm-hmm. Children all the way through adulthood staring.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be unnerving to stand on a street corner and have every car that goes by turn.
Did you see that, Howard? Gee.
Yeah. How are the steps for her? Is it awkward for her to go up and down your steps?
Our steps are particularly small and shallow.
All right, that's nice. Okay, so that's, so really it is.
She's a musician in our congregation and things have been done to adjust it.
All right. So really it is a matter of information for the people in the congregation, isn't it? About the things, like in this book, what not to do. That list of what not to do is in my mind now about preferences. You wouldn't have to start with her. You could start a discussion about things that irritate or bother people in our community that make us feel less than who we are. Would she write would she write an article?
If she's prominent in this organization, she might be outspoken and find the article. Or report on a convention or something.
Mm-hmm.
If she could share some of those.
In some papers, that's a good idea, you could write a series on knowing each other better. And do... I hesitate to single out, although she might be willing to, say this, we have just, this is our only problem. We have this, but to have other people to open it up as an avenue for other people to talk about who they are and what they belong to, or special issues, a special issue column, to make it a vehicle for more than this person. But if she's the one that snapped, and of course she did, then she knows what bothers her. And I'm sure she would understand, because she's a musician and she knows you love her, she wouldn't keep coming there, that you want to make, that what you're after is an educational program for other people so they're comfortable knowing where she's comfortable. And then that helps anybody. Because most of the things like that are inadvertently done. Mm-hmm. You know, don't help me when I don't need help, when I say
think
no.
I would say the majority of the congregation is aware that would be against your dignity. It is just carelessly done.
But it could happen again.
Mm-hmm. Cool. But on the other hand, it should last for a while.
Good point. I like.
When you're going around the community and you use individual cups, not congregation, but. You put the cup back in after you've been given it.
Mm-hmm.
And well, of course, it's always being held way above her head. She can never see where to put it in.
Look at what you're looking at. Isn't that nice? All right. So you have instructions for those persons who help with communion. Isn't that that's the first place? What you're talking about, and that's just wonderful, is to make people aware of the fact that she is just a little person and that we have some responsibilities to respect her personhood. And so, you're talking about communion, let's say instructions. instructions, let's say, for, I would call them the stewards of the church, the ushers. How high does she have to reach to get a podium?
Pretty high.
Pretty high, all right. So you're going, and your instructions to the stewards.
No, I mean, Fulton can.
But even so, do they look at her, or does she have to, you know? So I'm making an issue of the fact that we have to think of everything. He said, you know, bulletins aren't a problem. They may be a problem. So you're instructing the stewards about things like communion, things like bulletins, and you're talking bit by bit to people about shaking hands.
Well, setting an example, too.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that's easy to do and sometimes not quite so, but setting an example, and if you see that something's a problem, and maybe it's a problem for you, but then to work on that, and not always easy to do, not always easy to,
absolutely,
you know, I don't want to shake her hand, she's got little things, but
but you're making me think about something that someone or two could start thinking of an example, and that is, as you leave church and people talk like that, probably would be easier for me to still sit in the pew and be there doing something when she came by and talk to her like this, rather than to be standing.
Mm-hmm. I feel hard to talk to
them
when you're standing.
So, you know, what's wrong with sitting down? And that takes time to talk. You know, if you're sitting down, you have time for more than a one sentence, hello, how are you today? And so that's another way. So we're talking about finding opportunities for face-to-face conversation. Right, that's right. No, but that's why I said sit. You know, if I'm sitting in the pew, that's where I am. That's a natural place. I'm not uncomfortable. Kneeling would be awful. You do that. See, if I kneel, it's childlike. Because you kneel to kids. But to sit. See, I'm in the habit of sitting in a pew if somebody with a wheelchair goes by. Because then I can talk to them eye level. And so I just translated that to an opportunity for me to be more eye level with this person. And if you have coffee, are you always up running around, or do you ever sit down with coffee? Some of those. Okay. So what's wrong with a couple chairs? Okay, so we're beginning to say, oh, I could do this. One thing will lead to another. You know, that's just the way that thing goes. Once you realize that part of the patronizing problem is that, what I'm beginning to see is part of the patronizing problem is that she's always there. If we could put ourselves there, I'm talking about equal height, tape doesn't pick up that I had my hand on a child size and then sat down, but if we could do more eye level, we would not talk to her as we would to a child. So there are a number of those kinds of things that we can begin to, and if people see other people doing that, it probably would take, so we have several ideas. She could write an article, some of us could begin to be sure we're at eye level in a comfortable, easy way, or at least closer to her height. And you know what? I think she should be affirmed for the fact that she's very available to children. She really is. If she could have a special, I'm not saying that well. One of the women in our congregation will be forever dear to me. It's a woman who always took time to ask my children how they were, what they were doing, and how things were going. She always had time to talk to the kids. They loved her. This woman might be encouraged. Great. That's just great. They love her. Yeah. That's one. All right. We have time maybe for one more.
We have a situation in our foundation where a young man, well, he's about 33 now, I guess, mildly retarded, fine-looking young man and everything, but he has this behavior problem that he is overbearing and wants to talk too much, wants to take over, and it's really tough. He wants to be a youth counselor for one thing, you know.
Let's just say talk too much.
Oh, dear, it's... And I don't know how I'm going to handle that.
All right. talk too much. That's more than, I was going to go for the one, the children that are noisy, but I guess to talk too much is just as good as the children who are noisy.
And he wants to be in everything.
All right.
Naturally, the church is the place for him to be.
All right. Let's look at, this gives me an opportunity to look at the other side of the coin. What we see is what aggravates us. That is that he talks too much. Can't, that says that I have a very great need for attention.
Yeah.
Right. So what that talks about is need. Can we look at something that that person does well and give that person an opportunity to do that? To first of all, take care of the neediness in some way.
I think the church has bent over backwards to answer this need. And for instance, we can decorate cakes.
Okay, all right, all right.
It doesn't seem to help. He wants to be important. Oh, he wants to be important. And
what you do, as long as you keep, as long as we keep shaking our heads and saying uh-huh and uh-huh, the conversation goes on, doesn't it?
Well, he wants to run things. He wants to take over the Sunday school. He wants to run the vacation Bible school.
And we'll volunteer for everything. I don't know the answer to that. But I think some of the suggestions, and anybody else have a suggestion or option? Something to do? That's difficult, isn't it? It's not just this young man's retarded. There's lots of folks.
He went through high school at an age just before special education programs came into high school. So he sat through about five study halls a day with nothing to do. Just sat there, and he got his diploma, of course. But in the meantime, I can see where this could
be. I think that we need to find something that has a service to people that is more than twice a year decorating cakes to help this young man feel he is a part. Well, I don't know what that is. But you see where our thinking is going? Can we find something, regular contribution? Because what I hear you saying is he wants to do all these things.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be a regular participant
in
something.
Yeah.
And since I don't know the young man's skills, I think that's a challenge, instead to help that person participate with the group that folds bulletins, with the group that folds newsletters, with the group that, whatever it may be, and to be with, he wants other people, to be with other people and to participate in some way with the task that he can do and do well. So he feels good about it. I don't know what that's going to be. Well, we've got just a few minutes, and we're going to have to close it up. We've done lots of things. We'll take this off and ask if we, with reference to closure for today and closure for our sessions, we have just two people have been here for any of the other sessions. I'm going to put up the word closure. Any ideas that you can take home? Any ways to think about things? Or did we cover too much territory?
Okay. I think I like your...
Good, yes.
I think I like your heading.
All right.
The idea of perhaps identifying an issue rather clearly to begin with.
Use the word issue.
And then trying to really brainstorm and get some suggestions and options, perhaps including the person that is the
concern. Ah, good. I'm going to put that down, options, and then I'm going to put here number two. Include, I'm going to say the person with special needs, all right? In his or her own problem solving. Okay. Can't fix it for him. Good. Get one more.
This is a bit outside, but I think I want to go home and see why we don't have very many handicaps that are visible. I think that, I don't know whether my statistics are right, but I think that one in 10 is handicapped.
Mm-hmm.
We sure don't have very many visibly handicapped people. I'm sure that there are other ones that are invisible, the asthma, the allergies, and the army disabilities. But why is our church not absolutely?
It's only a place for people who are already perfect. Is that the way we feel about it? That's not so.
We haven't made it comfortable for people with disabilities.
All right. And that's another one. You've got to give me another one. Comfort level. That's a lot of ideas for 1 hour session. I'm usually happy if we come up with three. I'm delighted if we come up with three. Happy if we come up with one. You came up with four. Congratulations.